AMP Nashville Pubcast listeners. It's your host, Tim Hunzi. I have a great episode for you today. I have with me hit songwriter Tony Martin, hit songwriter and producer Jimmy Robbins, and we delve into the history and the evolution of the songwriting room. I really think you're going to enjoy this episode. You're going to get a lot of knowledge. These are two of the smarter guys I know, and just buckle in and get ready. Well, I'm going to throw this out, and I would like both of y'all's perspective, because I grew up in the era, of course. Again, Tony was one that kind of raised me, you know, when I was a young little pup in the business. And we put what we called writers through boot camp on their first deal, new writers in town. We'd make them rewrite and rewrite until we did a demo session. Because as you said, you get to bullets quick now. Like, you know, you were driving home and all of a sudden you had a finished demo, something you could pitch. But I find that, like, I felt that that was a good time for writers to learn their craft, to learn to rewrite and revisit and just keep going and make the song the best it could. And now all of a sudden we get songs really quick. And I don't know if I would love your perspective, Tony, on how you feel that that's affected songwriting as a whole. Is it a pro, a con that now, like, I have found, and this is why I'm asking this question, where I've gone, hey, man, maybe we should rewrite this. And I remember getting pushback one time from a writer going, well, it's already done. It is what it is. And we're moving on. So I remember kind of going, well, man, it could be better though, but I get it that it's a finished thing. So we get a lot more bullets, as I like to say, to go out and run and pitch, because everything almost now is demoed, right? Even the good, the bad, the ugly, they're demoed. So you can go pitch them. And, but I also feel that maybe at times it takes longer for a writer to develop the skill of writing. Maybe that's my kind of innate sense on it, but I'm curious what you guys have seen. Y'all are in the rooms and you're writing. And now, Jimmy, you've been doing this for a long time now. Have you seen any of this, or am I off the mark, or how's that experience been for you guys in the actual rooms?
It doesn't matter how it evolves or whatever, and what time of day you do it, what gear you use. You can go to the most basic thing. It's still the end product. All right. I only care about the end song, making it the best it can be. And I think everybody who's serious about it is doing that. And I used to always say in the old day, I used to say, I don't make any money writing. I make money rewriting. I make sure that it's tight. I make sure that it's all there. And sometimes that also requires you to get away from it for a while and then pull it back up. So now you can hear it more as a listener would hear it. And it's amazing how many times I've done that suddenly I go, okay, I know what needs to be done here. Because before I was just so into it or into a line that I wasn't seeing the song as a whole. So I wrote so many songs by myself before anybody would even write with me. And then you had to, and I'm sure Jimmy did the same thing. You started this thing alone. And you wrote these things by yourself in a room doing this until somebody took notice and said, hey, why don't you come over here and, you know, play with us?
Jimmy, yeah. Do you have a take on that?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely truth to this process being, it does discourage rewriting a little bit. Like, that's probably rarer than it used to be. And over the years, I've kind of shifted my process to where, like, I used to build tracks in advance and present pieces of music as a jumping off point. And these days I really just write, and I don't even start building the track until the song is finished, because I figured out pretty quick that if it sounds great, people are going to assume it's great. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of better to wait. I would rather not polish a turd. You know what I mean? I'd rather polish a nice nugget. One, I would say too, Tony, you tell me if you agree with this, but there was a chunk of time right when I came to town and for a couple of years thereafter where I think cool tracks could get a bad song cut because people were so interested in the sounds. And I even feel that way about my own catalog, where there's songs that got cut because of the way they sounded at the time, not because of the song. And I think we're not really there anymore. You know, I feel like there's a lot of artists asking for guitar vocals. I've started turning in two versions of songs now where I do a full demo and then I mute everything and also turn in a guitar vocal.
Yeah, Yeah, I think sometimes they want to hear past all of that. I've had a lot of opportunities where producers get the song from the artist or something, say, man, I love this song, and they strip away all of that and just do a guitar vocal with the producer, or just do a guitar vocal and sing it back and say, do you still like it?
Mm-hmm.
Still like it. And I think that's what you have to do sometimes, is break it all the way down. You know, I'll be in a room with a lot of great singers, Neil Thrasher, Wendell Mobley, Jim Collins, Mark Nessler, and, you know, it'll sound freaking great. And I always want to tell them, go, now let me sing it and see if it still sounds good.
Yeah.
If it still sounds like the song and stuff, you know. I think the writer that want to rush through that, I don't know what that, I wouldn't do it. If somebody's telling me, I think this could be better, and they're giving me a good reason, I'm going to listen.
Branching off a little bit just about the evolution, one of the things that we talk about a lot, and you know, and I think would be great to, since I have two amazing songwriters here, is talking about finding your role in the room, because we've kind of touched on it. Like for any of the, a lot of my listeners are up and coming, or you know, publishers or young writers trying to figure out what this is that we do for a living. And so talk about that from y'all's perspective. Like, how do you find your role in a room? And maybe even touch on some, because this was a great question somebody brought up today. Like, what about conflict in a room? How do you deal with that? So those kind of two questions, but in finding your role, I think that you kind of run into conflict at time and you got to manage that. So maybe Jimmy, start off, because you probably faced a little bit of that, but doing multiple things, like how do you know when to find your role in a room, and what are some advice you can give on doing that?
Yeah, I think that's knowing your role and finding your role. It is really important. I've always said that the writing room is kind of like a math problem, and it needs to add up to the right thing. And I think the best thing you can do is not have an ego about it. And so, like, there are days where I kind of need to do all the stuff because somebody's not in the mood. And so I'll do all the stuff. There are other days where somebody's on fire and I don't want to just force my idea so that I can feel like I did something, you know. It's, and there's 50 degrees in between there, but just being willing to see what's happening. And, you know, I think the best songwriters can kind of sit in different chairs depending on what is needed that day, or what, you know, what the room needs. And then with conflict, you know, basically we're all sort of miniature therapists at this point, because you spend 200 days a year sitting down and getting intimate with either a friend or a stranger. And so, I mean, I think if you're good at it, you kind of get comfortable with talking to people and dealing with all that stuff. So I don't see a ton of conflict in the room most of the time, to be honest. But I'll definitely not like somebody and tell my publisher later.
You'll appreciate this. I always said, when I was working with Brett James, he was one that was one of the best at this. Everybody loved Brett, and in the room, like even like on the worst day, he was like the best hang. He would do it, but he'd walk out and look at me, go, never again. And that right wouldn't happen. But those were inevitably the ones that would call, like, man, they love Brett and want to write with him again. I'm like, yeah, not gonna happen, man. Sorry, but yeah, you got to play it cool in the room. Tony, you have any input, insight on that particular?
I just feel like, you know, Nashville is such a nice town. And it's nice, you know, it's just everybody's really nice. But it always seemed to be an understanding, at least for me, man, the best thing wins. And if we can't agree, you know, then that means there's something better. And we go for that better thing, to where we both just go, yeah, that, well, that's it. So conflict really wasn't a thing. If somebody went, I don't know, you know. You know, and some people are really good barometers. Like you brought up Tom Shapiro. I mean, if I hit, I would think I was coming up with the coolest stuff, and Tom would sit there and go, I don't get it. And I'm thinking, boy, if Tom don't get it, then I'm going the wrong direction. And you learn to pay attention to those kind of signals. So it's okay. Now, how can I, you know, how can we make this better? I thought to say that in a lot of ways, I was kind of early on, man, I kind of locked in with some people that I did really well with and I liked. And, you know, it was Mark Nessler on Tuesday, Wendell Wednesday, Thrasher Thursday, Wild Card Friday. You know, I kind of got into this thing, and then other people came in with us, and I'm like, Jimmy, there's not a lot of conflict. I don't know that. And if there was, I'd be Brett James and say, never again. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. We've had those combos before. I didn't think a conflict that probably happened, and probably that word conflict sounds so heavy, but sometimes you're in there trying to argue for the rightness of the room. Right. And sometimes that's even challenged. I mean, both of y'all kind of touched on it. You got to do the right thing for the room. And sometimes it's knowing when to just probably throw in the surrender flag and just let it happen. And I would say, at least from my experience of listening and working with writers, it typically is when you're adding an artist and you kind of have to lean into what they want to say, which maybe or may not be the best part of the song. And I just probably said that publicly that I'm slamming artists, but I didn't mean it that way.
But instead of throwing a flag like surrender, you can look at it as like, hey, let's go with the guy that really believes. Let's go with the person who goes, I'm telling you, this is it. And you go, okay, man, let's ride with that. Let's go.
Yeah, you've definitely got to pick your battles. Like, I'll fight, and then if I feel that, well, this is happening, I'll lean into it and just go with it. And I also have had the luxury of having not felt great about a song, and then that song be a hit, and then I've been proven wrong. So it's a good reminder that, like, we don't really know. We just have opinions. And so sometimes I want to be wrong. And so if somebody else is excited about something, I try to listen to that.
What are some of the challenges that you guys face in the room, and how do you overcome those challenges?
Hey, the one that for a little while in the business for me is suddenly, as it was changing over, you know, and I've seen a lot of change. Like, you know, it'll cycle and it'll move, but it's a wheel, it's rolling on down the road, and you're adapting and doing things. For a little while, the room where I used to write, maybe just us, you know, the two of us, and we wrote like a regular day, we started saying things like, well, who should we take this to? Or should we take it to this person? Or should we go see an artist if they like it, or do something before we even finish the song? And that one for me was a tough little period. It's sort of like, wait a minute, I got sweat dripping off my nose over here. I'm working real hard. I thought we were almost done. And now we're, you know, thinking like that for a while. And the only way I solved it was after a while, I just said, I'm just going to write this song, man. I just want to write it as good as we can write it. And then if you think there's somewhere it needs to go, take it, you know, kind of thing. That was, for me, that's been the biggest evolution change thing, to where suddenly there were all these other levels to take into account of what we should do to be able to exploit the song.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Jimmy, you can jump in and add to that question, but I'd keep him. I do remember, and a lot of my writers even ask, what's the intention of the room? And I came up like with Tony, it's like, write the best song, or like if one person bounces off a right, then everybody bails. And I'm like, I pay you. This is a publisher. I'm like, you get paid to write songs. Just go write the song. But if you have an answer, Jimmy, well, jump in there, and then that could be part two, what I just said.
I don't disagree with you, just write the song. But there was a handful of years where outside songs were becoming really tough. It was getting really hard to get an outside song cut. And that, honestly, just in the past 2 or 3 years has shifted, where I feel like we're really starting to have some opportunity for outside songs. And so there was a minute where I definitely kind of felt that way, where it was like, if we just write a great song, there's only a handful of people we can take it to who will cut it without being on it. But the other difficulty I find in the room kind of piggybacks on what you said, Tony, which is everything's gotten so camped up now, where there's these little pockets and everybody owns publishing companies like the artists and stuff, and they'll only take things from their guys. And so what that's led to is big rooms. You know, like a four-way used to be super rare. Like, I remember the first time I did it, I was like, well, there's a lot of people. Okay. And then, you know, I've been in the room with 6 people, which is way too many. And I just feel like 2 or 3 people is perfect to write a song. And that's difficult for me when there's so many people.
And that's interesting that you've been in the room. I've just of late, I'm on songs now with like 5 people. but I was never in the room with five people. Like I started with somebody, then I went home, I worked really hard, I finished the thing, and then I played it for the third person. And the third person go, "We love it. Your work is done." And, you know, but to be in a room with six people, I'd be watching a basketball game.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to hear that, because it is tough. I have a big issue with that. Does it really take that many? But I get why and how that kind of happens, where some days fall apart. And then, like you said, that maybe you're doing a camp and everybody writes that day. But that does seem like a lot of voices. I don't do well with a lot of noise. I would implode as a writer if that.
Yeah, it's hard to think.
Yeah, great can come from one. Great can come from six, seven, whatever. To me, it's value added. So how many people, the six people in the room, are writing the lyric and the melody? But somebody could come in later and go, "Boy, I got this cool track, and it'll go with this, and I got this." And you go, "Hey, value added, man, that made the record. You know, that made it." The singer comes in and sings it, and they do it their way, and they take the melody this way a little bit and stuff. That's value added. I got it. But the camp thing, you know, fires only keep so many butts warm. And, you know, you're all trying to sit around and, you know, one fire. That's a big shit, you know.
Let me ask y'all this question, and then we'll start wrapping it up. And so if you have anything to add, we can jump in there. This is just commentary part here, but have y'all noticed that the speed of the industry seems, because Jimmy kind of mentioned like that these camps, all of a sudden now, two things. I think it is better because a lot of people are taking outside songs, but now we see these artists just popping up and getting signed really quick before any of us really have an opportunity to develop a relationship with them, because our business is relationships. It's always been, always will be. Developing those deep relationships, coming up with your group and expanding your group, your network. But are y'all noticing it how do y'all feel about that? Because like all of a sudden this artist starts, you know, streaming really well or starts getting some, you know, some selling really numbers. And next thing you know, these guys have record deals and are putting records out. And you're like, wow, I just missed that. That happened really fast. And I'm feeling it. How does that affecting you guys in the room? Or do you even think about that? Or is that part of your process? What do you guys feel?
I was actually just having a conversation about this. I feel like there's two things. It's you can either miss something and not, you know, you didn't get in there early enough. And now everybody's so quick to like, well, they write with so-and-so because they wrote the first hit. And so now that's the crew. And then the other side of that coin is you can say yes to all the new artists and do a bunch of those writes, hoping that you're in there when they pop off. And it's tough because that's really exhausting. And I'm trying to find a balance of it in my world where I do enough of the new things that are gambles to be connected to these new people. But it's really fatiguing because it feels a little bit like my first or second year of a pub deal where you're writing, you know, where you do the speed dating year, where you meet everybody and try all these different sessions. And there's a real fatigue that comes with that. At least I find.
Tony, you have any insight on that one?
I think the way they're doing it, you know, it just felt like a little while. I thought, and I did it. And, you know, I wrote a lot of how you need to get in with this person and talk about the evolution. Back in the 80s, 90s, you know, early 2000s, they would try to get you in the room with the artist. Well, did they have a record deal? Like, you wouldn't do it if they didn't have a record deal. That was like the bottom level. They have a record deal. More likely, they already had a record out. You know, and now they want to write with you, or they want this, or they heard your song and they want some, you know, they want you in the room. Now they've got artists and they don't have record deal or anything. And I honestly believe you could write with a new artist every day, a different one every day for a year. And you're going to turn on the radio and go, "Where was that one? I never met that one." and so I kind of pulled off of that. And I do the ones that I really, really like. I really like what they do. I hear what they've done. I really like it. Because there's just trying each one. Like Jimmy was saying, it's like this speed dating thing. you know, and I just find myself coming home after all that speed dating at home and call my regular riders and go, the whole time I wished you were there. I just wish I missed you so bad.
Can you come hold me?
And I still to this day, I'll ride with some real rider, you know, like proven track rider, and I'll get in a room. It's just us two. And he goes, oh, this is so fantastic. Man, I haven't done this in a long time. Just riders riding, you know, and yes, well, this is where we all end up. This is the depot where you get off that train. I just want you to know, you know, but
those are the best days though. The just rider days are the best days.
Yeah. And, but occasionally you will meet one of these young people who are riders, man. They really are right. They are artists. They know what they're doing. And it's just, it's the happiest thing you can have, but it's a rare thing to do. It's a rare, you know, most of the time, if you go back to speed day, I've written with a lot of swipe lefts. All right. No, thank you. You know,
well, that's sort of the double-edged sword with social media and TikTok and stuff, is it can blow up a song, but like one song does not make an artist, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like the singing shows, like American Idol breaks a singer, but it doesn't break an artist necessarily. And so they ran into that with how do you turn them into artists? And there's definitely some of that. And that's not to say, I mean, there's amazing artists who have blown up via TikTok too, but not all of them.
No, but hasn't it always been that? They played the little clubs. They worked their way up. It's always been that. It's the cream rises.
Yeah,
kind of thing. So whether they come through American Idol or for a while, remember Sirius Radio, a lot of people broke. Sam Hunt was out on this, and Cole Swindell were on this satellite radio getting played with regular radio, and they broke across. TikTok, they're breaking across. But the best ones, the ones that are the whole package, they are an artist that people go, I love what they do.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi, executive producer Brandon Harrington, mixing and editing by Casey Porter, and this has been a Dime Collective production.